Welcome to the Thursday, October 29th, 2020 edition of the Clemson Dubcast. A wind-blown edition of the Dubcast, at least up here in upstate South Carolina. Kind of a crazy morning. At TigerIllustrated.com, Paul Strelo has plenty of good analysis and intel on Clemson's latest football commitment, junior Blake Miller. Highly regarded offensive lineman. Big get there for Robbie Caldwell and the Tigers. Title sponsor of the Dubcast since the very beginning, back in August of 2018, Parham Smith and Archenholt Law Firm in downtown Greenville. They want you to know that their office remains open and available to serve you during the COVID-19 crisis. They are also offering their clients the ability to meet via telephone or through video conferencing. Whether you have a loved one who has suffered from a car accident, defective product, a neglectful nursing home facility, or medical malpractice issue, Parham Smith and Archenholt's Greenville lawyers can provide the protection and guidance you need. Free consultations, 864-990-4588. Or on the web at parhamlaw.com. That's parhamlaw.com. Football season is grilling season, and Jack Oliver's Pool, Spa, and Patio is South Carolina's premier source for the big three names in grills: Weber, Traeger, and my favorite, the Big Green Egg. Make the most of your stay-at-home tailgate party with a premium gas, charcoal, or pellet grill from Jack Oliver's. Their 10,000 square foot showroom offers a huge selection of grills, patio furniture, and hot tubs and saunas. Shop in the store or buy online at Jack Oliver's Pool, Spa, and Patio, 3303 Forest Drive in Columbia, and jackoliverpools.com. If you're in the Eastern Midlands and PD area and you're in any way interested in buying and selling a home, commercial property, land, need to consider reaching out to Uptown Realty. They're based out of Sumter and run by a friend of mine, Patrick Enzer, big Clemson guy, used to cover the Tigers in a newspaper capacity, longtime supporter of Tiger Illustrated, longtime listener to the Dubcast. The home buying process should be an enjoyable experience, so let Patrick and his staff do all the heavy lifting. All you got to do is pick up the phone and call 803-774-0435 or go to UptownRealtySC.com. Okay, to this week's interview, J.D. Davis, going to talk a lot about the Paul journey, foundation of which was largely laid by J.D.'s father, the great Jeff Davis. Joined by J.D. Davis, the son of the legendary Jeff Davis. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. God's been good to me.
So I was talking, I think, with a mutual friend yesterday, Harold Coleman, Harold Dutch Coleman, and your name came up, and he said he used to call you and your twin brother spare parts.
That's right. I guess funny story about that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, my brother and I dislocated our hips in high school, and I dislocated my left one, and my brother dislocated his right one. So they were saying, yeah, if you would have just put us together, you'd get the perfect twin, perfect linebacker. Maybe we would have stood a chance against our dad, but instead there was two of us, so we're just a bunch of spare parts.
That's great. Yeah. That is great. All right, what are you up to? Are you in D.C. now?
I was in D.C. I actually just now moved back to Pendleton the beginning of October because my company, Adobe, pushed our work from home. And so I'll be working from home for the foreseeable future, and figured I'd move back closer to home, try to buy a house, and try and get ahead in life, and instead of just paying the insanely high rent that comes with living in or around D.C.
Not to mention the insanely ridiculous traffic in and around D.C.
Yes, you can say that again. Don't miss that at all.
All right, so give me some background. When did you start with Adobe, and what have you been doing with Adobe?
So I started with Adobe last August, 2019, August 5th. And my title with them now is an enterprise renewal specialist. And that's an inside sales rep position. And I work together with two outside sales reps, and we cover the state and local governments for 16 states in the Southeast and South Central. And I sell Adobe's digital media products. And so that includes like Creative Cloud and their document cloud solutions, which would include Acrobat and their digital and electronic signature, Adobe Sign.
Okay, so what's the sales process like? Like, what's your daily routine doing that?
Yeah, so my daily routine doing that is just every day I have internal meetings and external meetings with customers, and it's my job to make sure they renew their contracts on time and that the renewal process is as smooth as possible, because it's a lot of moving parts that are included in this process, because Adobe doesn't do direct deals. Normally, they normally have to go through a reseller and a distributor, so through a channel. And so, yeah, I'm just in charge of making sure that process runs smoothly and that they get their contract purchase orders in on time, so they don't lose the service to our software.
Okay. And were you roommates with Cannon Smith up in D.C. at one point?
I was. I was roommates with Cannon for a long time until Corona hit, and then I came and stayed with my parents for a couple months, and then I actually moved in with another guy that I played with, Connor Seekis, for a couple months. But then that's when I heard that I'd be working remotely for a while, and that's when I finally moved back down here.
And is Cannon, is he working for the Commerce Department?
Yes, he works for the Secretary of Commerce.
Wow, that's... I mean, you're not him, obviously, but I'm just curious. I wonder what that's like as far as what he's doing.
Yeah, I just know he does a lot of traveling. He does some advanced work for them. So, yeah, he does a lot of traveling. We actually didn't see each other much. We saw each other, I mean, a good amount, but a lot of times he was gone on business trips. So
this week is, I guess, it's been designated Paul Journey week by the football program, and they're doing a lot of stuff to promote it on social media. Earlier this week, we interviewed Darian Rencher and KJ Henry on about the Paul Journey. I guess, what's your best description? I mean, I know what it is, but what's your best sort of general surface level description of what Paul Journey is and does?
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. To me, Paul Journey is a leadership initiative that provides opportunities for personal growth, community outreach, and career development. And so the program Paul Journey integrates into the person's overall Paul Journey. Once, you know, you go to Clemson, you have your own Paul Journey. But yeah, the program integrates into your own Paul Journey and provides you with opportunities to advance yourself in life, not just at college, but, you know, where you'll be in 10, 20 years. And that's exactly what Paul Journey has done, is given me a head start. I'm doing things that I wouldn't have even imagined that I would have been doing at 24 based off how I saw my life going if football didn't work out. So I am very grateful and thankful for Paul Journey, because I definitely would not even be close to where I am without it. And it really changed my life for the better 1,000 times over. But yeah, that's what it is to me in a nutshell.
And during your time here at Clemson, what are some of the, I guess, trips and internships and things like that that you did as part of the Paul Journey?
Yeah, so for me, I was able to be a part of the first group of seven that went on the first micro internship to Adobe. And that is the number one reason why I have a job with them today. Not just because I performed well at the internship, but because of the relationships with the people that I met with Adobe. I continued on with those through the 2 years of the rest of my football career. And I leaned on those relationships to get my foot in the door. And the rest is history. That's why I have the job with them today. And then so I also did an internship with Cisco. Thoroughly enjoyed learning about them and their company as well. And I was actually going through an interview process with Cisco as well. But I decided to pull out because I wanted to focus on the rest of my senior year of football and really give that my all. I didn't want to be splitting time between trying to get a job and playing well my senior year. But yeah, those were two of the major things that I was able to do through Paul Journey, professional development wise. And of course, there were, I never got to go on any of the mission trips because I chose to do the internships, but there were plenty of other community service events that I was able to plug myself into because of Paul Journey as well.
Rencher was saying that he has numerous friends who play at other schools, and he's continually told by them that, that they don't have anything like the Paul Journey where they are. Is that a big part of it, that is kind of cutting edge and kind of pioneering in your mind, sort of based on your grasp of the landscape elsewhere at other football programs?
Oh, absolutely. Paul Journey is completely different than anything else you'll see anywhere. And if people are smart, they'll build their own Paul Journeys at their schools if they want to stay ahead with getting student athletes that want to come to their school. Because if we're being honest, a lot of guys aren't going to make it to the NFL. And I mean, what Paul Journey's done for me is I was not afraid. I wasn't scared of what my next steps were. I had confidence in where I knew I was going to be able to go after playing football if the NFL wasn't the place for me because of just what the opportunities that it afforded me. So, if the rest of the world knows what's good for them, they'll be trying to duplicate Paul Journey as soon as possible. But yeah, it's a new age, type of thing. This isn't something that's been going on for a while, and people just, and Clemson finally came up for a name for it. No, Clemson and my dad created this program. It's the first of its kind, and as you can tell, it's life changing. And so, yeah, it's definitely a pioneering entrepreneurship, whatever you want to call it, but it is breaking new age type stuff for sure.
Does the average fan or college football consumer fully grasp how difficult it is for a football player whose identity has been based on being really good at football his whole life, on how hard it is when that, and usually it ends abruptly when football is over and he has to remake himself, sort of like just as another guy, whenever that end comes, whether it's at 18 years old or 22 years old or even 30 years old?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That is one of the most, hardest, devastating, I don't even know how else to describe it, moments in your life. And for a lot of guys, they don't even realize how devastating it is until it happens. And that's why you see guys who don't end up in positions to continue off their success from whatever they've done in the football realm. I mean, I've had guys, it was like my junior year, and I had a guy come up to me and he's like, yeah, I mean, all I've known is football. All I've known is I'm going to the NFL. And I don't know anything else. So imagine not knowing anything else and your football career is over. And that's all you did for 4 years. Plus your schoolwork. I mean, it is an impossible mountain to climb if you don't have your head on straight and if you don't understand that, life comes at you fast. And yet the average consumer, it sucks to say this, but yeah, football is who a lot of those guys are to their core. If they don't get, access to the right people, even the right coaches, the right, support staff. And yeah, thank God that Clemson has put an emphasis on the fact that you're not just a football player, because if they didn't, I mean, I would be seeing a lot more of my brothers struggling, because it is a major deal. It is I mean, when people say it's their identity, that is their identity, football player. And thank God Clemson is helping to, you know, cut that out. Football is not your identity. It's something that you do, and you try to do it for as long as you can. And whenever your time is up, that it is what it is. Pat yourself on the back for doing the best you can and learn how to move on. And that's what Paul Journey gives people the ability to do. I mean, I went to a rookie mini camp. I had opportunities to play in the AFL and whatever that other league was called, and I turned them all down because, I mean, I got a dream job at 23. I mean, you can't make this stuff up where I landed at 23. Like, that's not normal. Especially not normal after you're coming off playing football the last 4 years. I know it might seem like, oh yeah, it's just a game, but no, that's people's livelihoods. And that's all they've been able to do to take care of their families, to take care of themselves, that's all they've been able to see themselves doing to take care of themselves in the future. And then it's just ripped away from, so yeah, no, people, in my opinion, have no idea how hard it is for a 19, 23, 30 year old man to just be done with football and have to figure out where to go next. Even with having a strong faith or having a degree, it still takes a lot of heart and effort, and a strong mentality to be able to pull yourself out of that football hole and into another area of life to make sure you're not, you know, on the streets or you've got money to pay your rent.
I always think of Taj Boyd as an example of that. I mean, I know he has sort of publicly said that how much of a struggle it was for him when it was over. And I think he's a good example simply because he was a high, high profile college player, right? Like, had tremendous value, and
absolutely.
In his mind, there was no reason for, you know, to think he wasn't going to make it in the NFL. And so it goes literally from 80,000 people, you know, worshiping you every Saturday to it being over in a snap. And you're literally, you know, you're just another guy trying to scrape out a living. Not that lower profile players don't have it hard as well, but it just seems like that's the example I always think of.
The
super good college player whose skills don't necessarily translate to being a good NFL player. And then it's just like the rug being swiped from underneath your feet.
Yes.
Do you, like, let's say like the average college football team, you know, you got 85 scholarship players, and we know that statistically, I don't know, let's just say maybe 3 or 4 of those players, 5 are going to be in the NFL. But how many of them in your mind, how many of those 85 players think they're going to go to the NFL during their college careers?
At least 30 or 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least 30 or 40.
So that's probably a pretty big factor in that as well, is that their minds are not being prepared really in a realistic way, I guess, for the end.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a huge factor. It's a huge factor. They don't, they're not really thinking about a plan B or anything else. They fully expect to go to the NFL.
That's one of the most impressive things to me whenever I talk with your dad about the Paul Journey is that he has said he never wants to talk about football with the players. He wants to talk about everything but football. How much of an impact do you think that has to have a figure in players' lives who doesn't want to talk about the main reason they're there? You get where I'm going?
Yes. No, that is a massive, massive key to Clemson's success and the success and growth of the young men that go into that program. I think Jeff Davis is the best kept secret in the entire world, because that's how important he is to those young men at that program. I mean, we talk football 24/8, 365. And to have someone there who really could care less about what you do on the football field, but cares about where he sees you in 10 and 20 years, is life-changing stuff. And those are the kind of seeds that you need sown into your life that show you, hey, football isn't my identity. It's just something that I've been blessed to do, and I'm going to try to do it as long as I can. But at the end of the day, that's not who I am, and I can be so much better, and I can leave such a better legacy than what I think I could just playing football. And so just having someone like him sowing those seeds, they're the seeds that help someone who's thinking they're going to the NFL and then they don't, and they're on the street the next year. They're the life-changing seeds that person now has a 70K job, and they're being able to take care of themselves, and they'll be able to take care of their wife and family when that time comes. And that's how important someone like Jeff Davis is at the Clemson football program.
Everybody likes to, you know, lavish praise on Clemson's recruiting and, you know, how great of recruiters the coaching staff is, which is true. But I'm wondering how great of a recruiting tool is the Paul Journey? Because of course, parents, you're speaking their language when you talk about stuff that doesn't involve what happens on the football field, because while the players themselves, of course, are thinking about the NFL, the parents usually have a more realistic perspective, and they're thinking about education and what happens after football. How powerful of a recruiting weapon is that, do you think, for Clemson?
Oh, it's probably the most powerful at Clemson, and that's what's so funny about Paul Journey, is that's how different and that's how high level it is, that it wasn't even built to make guys come to Clemson, but because of how cutting edge it is, it's one of the main reasons why guys will come to Clemson. That's not even its purpose, but here it is impacting the program in ways that it wasn't even built for. But yeah, that, I mean, if I had a son right now, he's going to Clemson if he gets the opportunity, and Paul Journey would be the reason why, because I know if he does what he's supposed to do, he is going to be set to take care of himself and his family for the rest of his life. If he does what he's supposed to do, if he just goes in and works hard every day and tries to better himself, the opportunities that are provided by that football program along with Paul Journey, I mean, they're unmatched. You'd have to be trying not to be successful to not be successful. So
I don't know what your opinion is on the whole name, image, likeness and / pay for play argument, but some of the most frequent ammunition, in support of pay for play for college athletes is that, oh, they don't really get anything. You know, it's just a scholarship and books and food, and that's really kind of all they get. I'm just curious what you think, and this doesn't have to be construed as an argument against, you know, name, image, likeness, but I'm just curious the monetary value that you think that something like the Paul Journey has to an athlete, a football player, just in terms of everything we've been talking about, setting you up for to function and be successful after football. How much is that worth?
Oh, it's priceless. Those internships are not unpaid. You get paid for those internships. The people that you're able to meet, a lot of times it isn't what you know, it's who you know. The people that you're able to meet through that program, I mean, yeah, it's priceless. That Paul Journey, I mean, you can't even make up a number big enough for how much value you get from that program, being able to step in there.
All right, what's your first memory of Dabo Swinney? The first time you saw him? I mean, y'all were neighbors on Sycamore Lane, right?
Yeah, Sycamore Drive.
Sycamore Drive.
Neighbors for, yeah, like 12 years. My first memory. That's a good question. I can't even remember if it was that big of a deal. Really, my twin brother and I were in our basement, and Will and Drew come walking in. We're like six, they're like four or something at this time, and they come walking in to the wrong house, thinking that this was their house, but their house hadn't been built yet beside ours. And we're like, yeah, who are you guys? And I mean, we just became best friends instantly. I mean, 10 minutes later, we were outside on top of the mud hills behind their house lot, slinging mud at each other. So I guess Coach and Miss Kathleen were over there looking at the house, and I might have saw a glimpse of them then. But yeah, really, our first memories are from hanging out with Will and Drew.
And then I guess 5 years later was when Tommy Bowden was out, and then Dabo Swinney was in as interim coach on October 13th. 2008. What have you? I don't know how old you were then, but what are your most vivid memories of maybe not just that day, but that time? Because I think even before that happened, there were rumblings that he could be out because they had just lost to Wake Forest and yep. It sort of collapsed. And so I'm just curious, like as a that. The Swinney family, it's, you're wondering if you're still going to have a job.
Right.
And then I'm sure that extended to your family as well. Just what are your more vivid memories from that period and that transition?
Judah and I, talking through Will and Drew, like we had always known that Coach wanted to be a head coach. And at that time he was already the assistant head coach. And, whenever he got the job, we were ecstatic because at that time we actually weren't living beside them. We were living in a house in Easley. I think my brother and I were going to a private middle school in Greenville. My sister had just moved to Greenville High School. And so whenever all of that went down and Coach Sweeney called my dad to join the staff for the team, I mean, we were ecstatic because the first thing they told us is, hey, we're moving back. And so we actually moved back into the house beside the Sweeneys, and Judah and I picked up right where we left off with being best friends with Will and Drew again. And so that was those are some of the most vivid memories, just being excited the fact that we get to move right back beside our best friends. And not only that, like we bled Clemson football. Clemson football was everything to us. And now our best friend's dad is a head coach of Clemson football. I mean, that's dreams coming true. Like you can't even pick a better childhood for Judah and I. So, those are really the best memories. Him beating South Carolina that year, just memories like that just are, irreplaceable. And I always have those, in the back of my mind whenever I need them to pull them out to think of some good times. Those are always some of the ones that come up first.
Were you in elementary school then?
I think I was in like sixth or seventh grade.
Gotcha. So you were
Edwards. I'm being lazy. I didn't feel like doing the math.
That's okay. I don't like math either. So y'all moved back into the same house?
Yes, yeah, my parents had put that house up for sale for a while. I can't remember how long we were living in that Easley house at the time, but yeah, the house hadn't sold, and so we just moved right back into it.
Wow. So
yeah, God knew what he was doing.
Yeah. So I remember when Bowden was here, I remember I would have conversations with your dad, and he was kind of frustrated because he was more in a fundraising type slash mentor role. It was kind of a hazy undefined kind of role he had under Bowden, like working both for IPTE, I think, and also the football office. I remember he had that little office in the McFadden building.
Yes. Yes.
And players were always coming by, and he was always preaching his wisdom. And
oh yeah,
I would ask him like, "Well, what do you do?" Like, I didn't really know how to define his role. And I remember him saying, "You know what? I need to be, you know, less a fundraiser and more of a father figure type person for these players." And I, you know, it's not like he came out and outlined the Paul journey as his vision, but in hindsight, it seemed like that was his vision at the time that he really, yeah, that's really wanted. Do you remember that period in those terms? And maybe do you remember the same things that he was kind of, I don't want to say held down, but his full vision sort of wasn't really being able to materialize at that time?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You hit it right on the head. Like, it might not have been called Paul Journey all the way back then, but yeah, the Paul Journey you see now, my dad has had in his head for a very, very, very long time. And so, yeah, whenever, and so that's why Coach Sweeney called him and said, "Hey, I want you to come work for the football team full time. And I want you to be that piece for these players." Coach Sweeney didn't know that it was going to be Paul Journey. He didn't know exactly how my dad was going to have it look, but he knew my dad had something, and he knew my dad was the perfect guy for the job. And so, that's, my dad was doing a lot of fundraising. He was a assistant athletic director. I can't remember what it's called, but for like external gifts or something. But he was torn between that and having players come in his office all the time and him talking, being a mentor, talking about life to them. But yeah, he's always, I wish I remembered how long, but because I remember having a talk with my dad when he was still in the Oculus, I guess before the Oculus was built. The West End Zone. And I remember him talking to me about Paul Journey when he was in the West End Zone a long time ago. And to actually see where it is now is just, I mean, I can't describe it. All I can say is, wow, like he actually did it. He had this plan in his head for a very long time, and then he's seeing the fruit of his labor with the way that it is now. And so, yeah, he always knew where he wanted to be and what he wanted to be doing with his life, and what he's doing now with Paul Journey is exactly where he wanted to be, and it is, and I'm happy for him because it's exactly where he needs to be. It's not even a job for him. It's just him out doing what he loves every day.
Do you remember how he described that vision way back, you know, 10, 12 years ago?
So I can't remember how long ago it was when we had this conversation in the West End Zone, but he had called it Paul Journey then. But before that, I can't remember what he was calling it slash what his vision was, but I didn't know. I know the Paul Journey wasn't like a new name that just came up a couple of years ago. Like it's been in his head for a very long time.
How often have you watched his highlight? I guess growing up, his highlight videos and the national championship and all that stuff.
Oh, I've watched those a thousand, 10,000, 100,000 times. I probably watched it like 2 weeks ago.
Why?
Just because that's I always love watching good football, and it hits a little closer when it's your dad doing it. And I've always enjoyed watching him knock people out. I mean, it's just pure entertainment. And so if I'm ever bored or sad, I know what's going to cheer me up immediately is watching my dad play Clemson football. And luckily for me, I'll throw his highlights on there, and then now I get to throw my highlights on there now as well. But yeah, definitely watch his a lot more than mine.
He has told me that before that there's no way that the teams of today could take those teams because they're not tough enough. Have you heard the same thing?
Oh yeah, he'll never stop telling me that.
You think he really believes that, or he's just saying that?
I plead the fifth.
Man, there's no way. I'm sorry. With all due respect to all the great teams of the past, the speed now is just next level. There's no way they could hang with the speed of today, right? Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely think it was a very different game back then.
Did you ever get the sense, I mean, Clemson's football program was wandering around the wilderness for 20 years. And I know it was extremely frustrating for a lot of old school Clemson folks, including your dad. Did you ever get the sense that he didn't think getting back to national championship was attainable for Clemson's program?
No, I think he always knew. I think he always knew we just needed the right pieces. Because, I mean, for a very long time, we were a play away. I mean, we were 8-4 and 9-3, playing Boston College for the chance to go to the ACC championship. Matt Ryan gets us. There are countless other times. I mean, I think we were playing Maryland. We lost by a field goal or something. That if we would have won that game, we were going to go to the ACC championship. So we were really just on the edge of greatness for a very, very, very long time. So that's what I think was most frustrating to the Clemson team, is that we didn't know what exactly we were. I mean, we were 8-4 and 9-3. I mean, I think I was going to lose my mind if we went 9-3 again. Like, we were literally that close for so many years. And Coach Sweeney brought what we needed, I think my dad always knew we always had the potential to get back to where we were. We just had to put all the pieces together. We were missing a couple pieces back in those 20 years of the wilderness that we're in, and we finally found those couple pieces, and you see what it's done for us now.
Can you describe the feeling of celebrating not just one but two national championships with your father on the field?
Absolutely. Oh no, it's indescribable. Those will be top two. Those will be top five feelings for the rest of my life. That's how incredible it is.
Is it so vivid that you sort of hold dear, like, certain things that were said? Do you remember things that, you know, the exchanges that you had after those games on the field, or is it just kind of a blur?
Oh yeah, no, I remember it like it was yesterday. They're so clear and so vivid, the feelings and emotions and the things that were going on. And yeah, I think that's what makes them so special, is like they haven't stated at all. It's like it happened yesterday. It's funny because I feel like I played Clemson football 10 years ago, but the memories from winning is like they act like it happened yesterday. Very, very weird space to be in.
What did he say to you?
Just how incredibly proud he was of us, and how special of a moment it is to not only just win and get to the top of the mountain, but to do it with your family just adds that much of an extra layer to it. He just thanks God that he could be a part of it with us, and it's one of the greatest moments of his life to see us achieve some things that and dreams that we wanted to achieve, and being able to be there right beside us makes it, you know, the icing on top.
All right, that 18 Alabama offense was pretty good. They averaged they averaged 47.7 points a game. You guys held them to 16. What was the, I guess, feeling going into that game? I mean, in talking to a lot of people around the team since then, there was a feeling that y'all were going to be able to do things to that offense that hadn't been done. What was the, by your recollection, what was the source of that confidence on the defense going into that game?
That's a good question. I think we just all believed in each other. And I think we were holding on to how we felt about the year before, because even the year before, our defense held them to 17 points.
Yeah,
and I know they had a different dynamic. Alabama's Alabama no matter which team is out there. The one that's scoring 40 points a game or the one that's scoring 10 points a game but only giving up 1 point a game. Like, either way, it's Alabama. And we had gotten to the point where we weren't as scared of Alabama, and the nameplate wasn't going to beat us anymore. And so we had 100% confidence in our brothers beside us, and we had 100% confidence in our coaches and the game plan, and we just held to that confidence, and then that's how you get the result that you get.
Another loyal supporter of the Dubcast is Blackacre Law Firm in Greenville, a subsidiary of Parham Smith and Archenthold. Blackacre helps South Carolina residents achieve their dreams of home ownership by providing experienced, professional representation for real estate closings. Attention to detail is crucial in real estate law. Blackacre is committed to making sure nothing gets by them preparing residential or commercial closings. Blackacre also offers estate planning services for their clients in the Greenville area. Find out more about Blackacre at 864-326-3557. If you're a business owner and your business involves credit card processing, you need to reach out to Tandem Innovative Payment Solutions. A lot of different ways that Tandem can improve your bottom line by shaving off some of those expenses. In addition to processing credit card payments, Tandem also manages inventory, schedules staff, tracks sales, gains insight into customers, and gets transaction reports. With Tandem, you're not a number, you're a neighbor. Learn more about Tandem at TandemPayment.com. Harris Flooring has been a major part of the facilities enhancements over at Clemson, not just with athletics, but also at the university level. And we are thrilled that they are a part of the Dubcast as a sponsor. Since 1947, the Junkins family and Harris Flooring have provided a unique shopping experience through value in their services, developing the right product solutions, and delivering on their promises. To check out some reviews on their work, just go to their Facebook page, Harris Flooring America. Rave reviews, just first class all the way. Phone number 864-642-6183. Happy to have Founders Federal Credit Union on board as a sponsor with us. If you've been to a sporting event in Clemson, you've probably heard about Founders already. They are the official credit union partner of the Clemson Tigers. In addition to that, all Clemson faculty, staff, and students are eligible for membership as well as IPTE members. Matt Gross is a proud Clemson alum and the vice president for the Clemson market for Founders Federal Credit Union. Matt's office is located beside the Walmart Neighborhood Market on Old Greenville Highway in Clemson. For more information, go to foundersfcu.com. Getting back to the Paul journey for a second, I'm curious, you know, the last 3 or 4 months have been unprecedented in terms of the football players using their platforms, whether it be the social justice movement, whether it be Trevor and Darian speaking up and saying, we want to play, and helping sort of steer momentum back toward actually playing a football season. I'm curious, how much does the Paul journey sort of contribute to that element of, hey, you know, you guys are high profile and you have the power to speak your minds, whatever your minds, you know, want to speak?
Oh, yeah. No, that plays a huge part because it gives us the confidence to do that. Without it, a lot of guys really don't understand, like, how big, I mean, not even just in the South, but, I mean, college football is a huge deal. And, I mean, it's meant everything to me growing up in Clemson. It means a lot to a lot of people who just go to Clemson for school or they live around here or their parents went here. I mean, it is a major deal. And a lot of times those players kind of can forget, like, how important and how big a deal they are. And so Paul Journey just, again, gives players the confidence and opportunities to realize that and to step into that. And I think that's what it was able to do to help guys like Darian and Trevor do. And that's one of the reasons why we're able to even play football this year. But yeah, Paul Journey, again, like I said, gives players the confidence and the opportunity to step into who they are and who they can be. And that's what they did. All they got to do is just do it. And they chose to do it. And here we are.
I guess back in June, during the peaceful demonstration and all that, what kind of emotions are you experiencing as you're watching that, I guess, from afar?
Oh, just so many emotions. The first one is just being upset because the fact that we still have to do this. but at the same time is a motion of respect and gratefulness for the fact that we have people that are still willing to fight, because we don't see, we don't believe things are the way they should be and the way they can be. And it's one thing to believe that. It's another thing to act on those beliefs. And so being able to be a part of all of that was, you know, beautiful. And it just continues to give you hope, and hope is what you need.
And that was another example of the power of prominent player voices, in that I think, you know, the Deshaun Watson and Nuke Hopkins, I think, speaking up about Tillman Hall and the Calhoun Honors College, I think probably played a pretty big role, I would imagine, in them ultimately deciding to make those changes. Do you think that we're just sort of, this is a new era maybe of players who before maybe had these conversations and voiced these reservations privately in instances such as that, who are actually speaking their minds publicly?
Oh, absolutely. I don't believe that it'll go away, and I hope it doesn't. Because yeah, stuff is done in the shadows way too much. And now that the players have the confidence that their voices won't fall on deaf ears, I believe that we're definitely going into a new age.
What has this been like for your dad, you think, as he is serving as a figurehead and also a mentor and also someone who I would imagine has some of the same emotions that you do about it?
It's been a whirlwind for sure. I wish I could really speak to the depth of what it's done for him. But yeah, he's had a lot of the same emotions that I have. But yeah, again, it's just one of those things where he can see the fruit of his labor, you know, being showcased, because we've got guys who felt the confidence to say, hey, let's put together a march, a peaceful protest, and not only say, hey, let's do it, but they're able to get it done. And so, yeah, my parents have been a part of marches and protests, and so I guess it's still disappointing to them that it's 2020 and they still got to be a part of marches and protests. But as long as the job's not done, then we got to continue to fight. And so they understand that. And they're just glad that through my dad's work, along with everybody else who's made Paul Journey what it is, that they've been able to impact the situation for the better. So yeah, I think those are be a few of the emotions that he's had about the whole situation.
Do you feel like, though, that there's some sentiment out there that, hey, you know, you had the demonstration in June, let's move on, and Saturdays are for football, let's just not talk about that stuff, let's just focus on football, or stick to sports, I guess, for lack of a better
right
term. What's do you sense that sentiment, and what is your, I guess, response to that sentiment, if you do?
I definitely sense that sentiment, and I wish I had the numbers to see if it was the majority or the minority. I want to say it's the minority. But yeah, of course, without numbers, I can't be sure. And what I say to that is all we can do is continue to try to get people to empathize and try to see things from different perspectives. And change isn't going to happen overnight. It's a very long process, so I don't expect to not see that sentiment for a very long time, but hopefully over time we'll continue to see that sentiment diminish and people understand that sports aren't more important than the way people feel, period. And so hopefully we'll continue to weed out that sentiment as time goes along.
What can they do? Like, you know, I mean, I guess it's one thing to say, okay, we need change, but what action do you think they can take to actually affect change in your mind?
When you say they, who are you?
Football players in general, not just Clemson football players, but football players and athletes in general.
Oh, just continue what they've all been doing, helping with people vote, continuing to go on talk shows and making people have the conversations, no matter how awkward or uncomfortable they may be. Just making sure it stays on the top of people's minds and I think that's what they're doing now. And I think that's what just needs to continue to be done. We can't just let it slip back to not being in the forefront of people's minds like it may have been before all this stuff sparked up. So just making sure it's on people's minds every day. And one of the things that they can't deny and they can't shove away and say, we'll think about that in a week or 2 months or 2 years. No, making sure they have to think about it every day is one of the ways where I believe you affect change.
What's your take on this Clemson defense right now? Looks like Skalski is going to be out a while. Tyler Davis maybe as well. They're kind of banged up. What have you seen so far through six games?
I mean, I've seen a lot that I've liked for sure. And I think that, yeah, Skalski and Tyler Davis being banged up hurts for sure. But there's been plenty of times where that defense has had guys that are out and we've had guys step up. And I don't expect anything different. I expect whoever needs to step up will do that. And they'll do what needs to be done to give the team the chance to win the ball games going forward. And that's all you can ask for.
Have you watched Trevor Lawrence closely this year?
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's hard to get much better than he was coming into this year, but it does seem he has a better pocket presence. He's doing a better job of taking what the defense gives him. He's not flawless, but it seems like he's the closest thing you can get to it.
Yeah, that's just a lot of that just comes with maturity and growing up through the game. He's always had the talent for sure, but I mean, just experience is the greatest teacher for sure. And yeah, just the fact that he's just more experienced is why you see his continued development.
What's your take on first of all, how hard is it to learn how to play linebacker under Brent Venables, and then how hard is it just to play linebacker in general for Brent Venables?
Oh, yeah. The amount of changing of direction and the amount of knowledge you have to have is second to none. Definitely one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life and will for sure still be one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life when it's over. That would be a tough task for a pro, but for a 18 or 23 year old who's got schoolwork and social life and your spiritual life all pulling on you as well, that is not easy, not even close to being easy. But I mean, it is doable. You put the work in, it's doable. So I don't know if that helps really answer your question at all. But that's like climbing Mount Everest. You're climbing Mount Everest every day doing that.
Is there a point that you get to, though, when it finally clicks and you realize that it clicks, I have this? Or is it more a case of he throws so much at you to learn beyond that point that you never really get to that point? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And yes, I did get to that point where I was able to look back at my past knowledge when he would throw new stuff at us and see how it all connects. So I was able to get to that point. It doesn't mean it wasn't still hard. And like, we still was learning. We were still learning a lot of new stuff every week, but, It is definitely doable. It definitely did click for me at a point where I was confident that I would not struggle with learning or being able to do the assignments that he would ask me.
When was that?
When was that? That was that was my junior year, after my junior year fall camp.
Okay, so fall camp going into 18.
No, fall camp just going into 18. Yeah, see, this is my I graduated, early. All my timeline's all messed up.
Oh, I got you. You're talking about junior as, academically.
Yeah,
So fall camp was 17.
The year we lost in the Sugar Bowl, that fall camp going into that year.
Yeah, yeah, fall camp of 2017.
Yes, yes.
So who? Exactly. Yeah, who's the best player that you have seen on defense at Clemson that you were around?
Ooh, that is wow. Wow, that is a great question.
Wilkins?
Yeah, probably. Dexter. I'll tell this to people, and I'll die on this hill to this day. If Dexter was 100% healthy, he would have been the number one pick in a draft.
Yeah, and he wasn't healthy much for his last 2 years.
That man wasn't healthy at all. And would still take up three blocks. It was like, it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. So I'm gonna go healthy Dexter Lawrence.
How about on the you didn't play with Isaiah last year when he was just truly freakazoid
monster. Yeah.
Would he qualify? I guess,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That man is just wow.
And how about on the offensive side of the ball, the greatest player you played against during your time here?
Yeah, probably Trevor, Deshaun, and Travis. I mean, Mike Williams is a cheat code as well. Mike Williams, he's up there as well. I'd say those four guys.
How about on the other team?
Oh, on the other team, Lamar Jackson. Yeah, that dude was terrifying to play against. Absolutely terrifying.
So, can you take me back to the practice before the 16 Louisville game and what that was like? Just trying to account for all the ways that he could beat you. What's your recollection from that?
Honestly, I honestly just don't even remember. All I remember is all of us just being like, this is Michael Vick on steroids.
Going in or actually during the game?
Like going in.
Yeah.
Like we had already known who this guy was. And so, we knew we had a tough task. Oh, you can't take one play. You can't even think about taking the play off because you're toast if you did.
So, it's one thing, I guess, for you to be super confident going into the game and then to see it actually, for the revelation to hit you during the game itself, but you guys had a full appreciation of him even before that?
Oh, absolutely. Just from watching film.
Yeah. Yeah, he had carved up, I guess, Florida State a couple of weeks before.
Yeah, he had done somebody dirty. I can't remember who it was.
Well, then, fast forward a year later to 17, you guys really spooked him in that game. Y'all won pretty handily. You think it was just showing him looks that maybe he didn't expect, or did he just not have the players around him, the supporting cast that he had the year before?
That's a good question. I don't know. That's a good question. I'd have to go back and rewatch that game. He was still the same Lamar Jackson. Still, we're like, how do we tackle this man?
What do you think of when you look at Brian Bresee and Miles Murphy?
I think, wow, if I would have gone into college that developed, I'd be in the NFL right now. I was a child when compared to how they came in. A child. They're grown men.
Yeah, see, that didn't happen back in 1981, did it? People show up looking like that? I guess except maybe maybe the fridge. Maybe the fridge showed up looking like that.
Exactly, yeah. I'm just like, I'm still mind-blown how they look like they've been in college for 3 years. I couldn't even grow a speck of facial hair when I was coming in.
Have you been able to check out the younger linebackers for Clemson, Trenton Simpson, Levante Bentley, the other guys?
Oh, yeah, I think they all look great. I think Clemson's future is very bright, a linebacker.
It seems like with Simpson, you can see, like, he's going to be just a freak of a player. But you can – things are still maybe just a little slow for him. You know, the typical, you know, true freshman experience who's, you know, having to play under Brent Venables. You see that as well?
Absolutely.
JD, anything we haven't – covered anything I've missed?
I don't think so. I think you've been very thorough. I appreciate the call and the opportunity.
What is your brother up to, by the way, your twin brother?
Yeah, he works for a packaging company in Columbia, South Carolina called Sunoco. He does sales and marketing for them.
Is it tough for him being down there?
Oh, yeah, he hates it, but he has a great job, so he will endure having to be in Columbia.
All right, JD, you have a great rest of the week and weekend, and keep in touch, my friend.
Thank you. You too, and I will for sure.
All right, thanks to J.D. Davis. What an impressive young man, and no surprise at all to anybody who knows that family. Thanks also to our 7 sponsors of the Dubcast. Appreciate their support, and to all of you out there who are listening. Really appreciate it. Cheers, everybody.